Quick disclaimer, we are not experts nor detectives. All information in today's episode is public knowledge and personal opinions. We talk murder and have foul mouth. Listener discretion is highly advised. I did that one for Heather.
Even without Heather, we can't get it right. That's right, y'all. That voice should sound familiar. We have Miss Stacy here in the studio with me today.
Hello. Been a long time, missed you guys.
Yeah, she, she's been around and behind the scenes. And Miss Heather, oops, I forgot to turn my phone on silent. Miss Heather is having a yard sale and apparently has to price all her stuff so she can get rid of it.
This is a good one. I'm excited that I got to sit in on this one.
Right?
I
know.
This is a good one.
I was mad at Heather, though. I'm like, dude, why didn't you freaking tell me you were having a yard sale? First of all, I'd have got shit ready and brought it out there to the yard sale. Second of all, I'd have helped you. I'd have helped you price your shit. I'd have come out and helped you with a yard sale.
You could have been doing the podcast.
Right. We could have podcast out there.
Live from Heather's garage sale.
Reporting live. Shit, everything happens down there.
No kidding.
We might get a live action.
No kidding.
Real live
all
action.
Down around her. What the hell's in the water down there?
I don't know, man. I told her, I said, you're the one that moved to bumfuck Egypt. And it's crazy down there.
There's a lot of, like, it really is. Maybe it's all the lead and iron in the water or something.
I don't know, man, but they ain't right out there. I'm just
of course, we're not talking about all y'all. We're talking about the crazies.
And there's a lot of them out there, specifically. It's funny because I feel like it's like, oh, you know, we're going to cover these crimes from Missouri. And every time it's like, Bon Terre, Missouri, Correctional Center.
We're all in Bon Terre Correctional Center. I would not want to sleep that close to this many crazy people.
No. My old boss moved in the prison. His house is across the street. Oh. He can see the prison from his front door.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
I would be scared. Like,
yeah. Like he said there was one time where they had like, they locked the prison down or whatever. And
can he like hear sirens going?
Yeah. And the news reporters were knocking on his door asking if they could, cause they couldn't go on the prison property cause they had the prison locked down. But they were doing like, I think it was during one of the, I don't know, a riot or something happened.
Oh my goodness.
And they were going to the prison to report and the reporters asked if they could park in his driveway and stuff and like stand on his property.
Just to film like
just to be able to
film.
Yeah. Wow. The prison.
Yeah. That's a little too close. Too close for me.
Nope. But so any hoot, how's your life been?
Going good. Going good, you know, living the dream.
Someone's dream.
Is that what they say? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it sure the hell ain't my dream.
That's what I say all the time.
It ain't my dream that I'm living.
Someone's dream.
No, everything's good. Everything's good.
Good, good, good. Same old same with me. School, work, life. I did get to do something very, very fun. As far as looking into,
like, ooh, what'd you do?
As far as into like possibly, you know, changing career paths and just kind of looking what my future looks like, jobs transitioning and this and that, I got to sit in with a 911 operator.
Ooh!
And listen to the calls come in and things like that. And it was a really, really fun experience. And definitely gave me the interest to want to look around and see what jobs are available in that field. It was super fun.
High stress?
The amount of typing and work and stuff that they do, like, legit.
And quick, right?
Like, so quick. All the information comes from them. Like,
wow.
Every information, I mean, cross
shout out to 911 dispatchers.
Yes, like, for real. They are the real
even
MVP.
In this story today to where I'm like, man.
Yes. Miss Della, I appreciate her taking the time out and helping me. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And she's like, well, let me know if you ever want to come back. I'm like, can I come back like every day?
Right.
Like,
I want to do one. Can we take a field trip?
Right. It was really neat though to see how they have it all set up and everything. It was really cool. It was a really cool experience. So I appreciated that. And
it was
something that one of the girls in my classes too had mentioned, you know, we had a group conversation where you have to interact with your classmates and stuff. And she had said something about, you know, well, being a 911 operator, and she like had this whole story, and I was like, that's so cool.
So and, someone in your classes also.
Yeah. And I was like, that's so cool. You know, I think it's really neat. And she's like, you should definitely look into it. And then it just registered to me that, you know, Della, who we had connected with in the very early stages of this, she runs the Missing Persons of Missouri.
Oh, page. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember seeing her in one of the umpteen thousand groups we belong to. I see her in all my crime groups. I'm like, there she is. She said something about being a dispatcher. So I just reached out to her and was like, hey, do you like it? Blah, blah, blah. And she's like, yeah, let me talk to my boss, see if we can get you in a sit-in, see if you're interested. That's awesome. Yeah, it was really cool. So
all about the people you know.
Yeah, it was fun. It was
opportunities
fun.
Come from it.
Yep. So that was fun. Other than that, you know, finals this week.
Oh Lord.
Yeah. I think I got like a 93 right now.
Woo-hoo! So good job.
Hopefully my finals don't tank it.
You got this.
But this was my criminology course. It's been a lot of fun. I don't want to send my book back. I gotta send my book back. And I'm like, I want to keep it.
Oh, did you rent it?
Yeah.
How much is it if you buy it outright?
Like $140 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool though. I like it. I'm like, that was one of the things I said I wished about school was just being able to read the chapters more versus focusing on the work.
Yeah. Just like, for like knowledge.
Yeah.
Just
for knowledge purposes. But anywho. Yeah. So today we're going to go back to Bon Terre. Now it didn't happen in Bon Terre, but this is where he currently is. One thing Heather and I started doing, when we started watching the Netflix documentaries and stuff, mm-hmm. a lot of them do their DOC number.
Oh, okay.
And we were like, we really want to start doing that on our episodes because that's who they become.
Well, yeah.
They become that number. In prison. Like, you
inmate
know,
they're
still people, but that every time you talk to a prisoner or somebody who's been there, they say like, that's our numbers. We are communicate by our numbers.
Yeah.
You know? So today we're going to talk about DOC inmate number 109-7660, Levi King. Levi was born September of 1982.
Right around us. Yeah. Me and Miss Heather, right yeah. around us.
You're later, actually, right? Well, Heather's older.
Yeah. Always.
Anyway, September 19, I almost said 1982. Oh, 1982. He wasn't born a Missouri native, but his parents divorced when he was really, really young. And he ended up moving and living and growing up in a small town called Pineville, Missouri. Again, one of those places that we don't really know much about. Pineville is at the very bottom, extreme southwest corner is the way it's described online.
Okay.
extreme southwest corner. It's damn near Arkansas.
Okay.
Based on what the map, I could see on the map, it was like nothing.
Pineville,
Arkansas.
Right. Nothing Pineville, nothing Arkansas.
Yeah, pretty much a lot of nothing. So we're talking like backwoods type stuff. Every cuckoo ca-choo person has a backstory, has a history of why they are who they are, why they're fucked up in the head. This is no different for Levi.
When you said backwoods, I mean, I think getting into his child, yeah, backwoods.
Yeah.
His
childhood seems like it was backwoods. I mean,
they grew up rough.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, he was one of many. He had six brothers and six sisters.
Whew.
It's not ever spoke about as far as like where his mother was, what happened to her, what happened after the divorce. None of that was ever discuss. And there's really not a whole lot about him that you find online other than what happened.
Right.
This, you know, other than what it is.
Well, I know they said he did have some priors though, right? Like juvenile priors.
He does.
Yeah.
He does have some juvenile priors. He was,
but so nothing besides that online family history stuff.
No,
really?
Nope. Not really any of the family history that I could find. And, so he was, well, I guess one of what, 12, raised with his daddy. Again, dirt poor. And when we say dirt poor, we mean no water, no electric, no sewer, backwood shit.
Yep, for sure.
It is said that his father, Scott King, wasn't very loving.
I think so.
And that he did fear his father due to like past abuse and everything like that. This is where it gets kind of, we go into all this all this shit about their past and their histories and how they're raised. But it gets rocky for me when I feel like we discuss these things and I feel like it's a blame game. You know, he was raised rough. He was this, he was that. I've been learning a lot about, you know, in the school shit that it does, the early development does play a role. His dad definitely failed him. But it's also at their core. So as we're young kids, our Agmandala is developing. You should have, oh my Lord, let me just say, trying to read that word over and over, because in the book it said 18,000 times and I can't even say the word normally. So trying to read that and process it in my brain and think that I can't say it, it was a whole mess trying to, y'all.
Can you just say that area?
I just said Dala. Okay. I start calling it Dala. The Dala. And I'm like, okay, the Dala. Okay, the Dala. And it was like, all I could focus on was the word. I'm like, fuck, I don't even remember what I just learned at this point. Anyway, it starts developing when we're in the very, very, very early stages. 3 and beyond. But at that age is very impactful. And he did have a rough upbringing and everything like this, but this is where, to me, it gets even rockier and proves that it's at your core. At 4 years old, Levi got angry at his sister. And, you know, like kids do, I mean, they get back at, like, Nia got mad at Story and cut her Barbie's hair.
Well, yeah, I okay. mean, that's normal no. kid, right?
No, no. 4 years old, he got mad at his sister and set her room on fire.
Okay, red flag.
Set her room ablaze.
Blinking lights.
So while we can say his Agmandala is being developed.
I think his was already kind of broken.
Yeah, I think his was broken.
Yeah.
At this stage.
Because if you're doing that kind of stuff purposely at 4 years old to hurt someone.
Yeah.
Maybe like, there was never a right or wrong learned.
Well, and that's where I think the failure comes in, is when this happened. Okay, now his father has failed him, because maybe his life could have changed in a different trajectory.
Yeah.
Had somebody been there, you know, had somebody, but ultimately it was in his core. It
yeah.
was there.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, so what was really chilling for me though was you watched it, right?
Mm-hmm.
He laughed when he said it.
He said, I was looking for something to destroy or something yeah. that would hurt her.
Mm-hmm.
I looked around and I decided the curtains.
I set our curtains on fire.
What? The curtains would really like your...
he was looking for something that would burn. And he went with the curtains, something like that. He also goes on to say how he grew up. Again, another number one factor to a psychopath.
Yes.
He says he grew up killing animals.
Yep.
Again, another chilling just situation watching him sit there and talk about how he basically just picked a cat one day and got his dad's gun and shot it until
there was
he didn't feel like yeah until there was
no he said literally I yeah. shot it until there was nothing left.
God.
And the way he says it is so
cold,
dry, just no emotion
at all.
None.
he went on though later down the line saying that, you know, his dad taught him to kill. Like his dad took a box of puppies or something
when he was
there.
Young, he said.
Which again was very weird to me. Not saying that he didn't or doesn't or what, but I just feel like, again, he tries to associate why he is the way he is to his father or to his upbringing, when I believe it's in his core.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe his father did do that and that's fucked up, but I think that's just another way of him justifying in his head.
No, I was taught it's okay to do that.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that's a hard, I don't know. We had fucked up childhoods and I'm not going to go, I don't know. I just can't.
I'm the biggest damn animal. Like,
I just could, it's in your core.
I believe there's something that didn't connect right for this one.
Yeah. He goes on to say though, I mean, it didn't stop there. You know, between 10 and 11, he started smoking. Between 11 and 12, he started drinking.
I was going to ask, is there a lot of drugs? And
He says around like 13 and 14, mm-hmm. he started taking pills. So it sounds like, I mean, he just continued to escalate.
Wasn't there something else that he did like young? Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm getting ahead.
I had these little sheets made up for us.
I'm out of practice here. She made me cheat notes.
Well, you know, believe it or not, I always give Heather, I'm always the one admitting, guys, it's my fault we're behind. It's my fault. Da, da. The one time, like, I'm prepared. I got all my notes ready. I'm ready to go. Heather's like, I won't make it tonight. I'm like, really?
Because, see, she knew you were prepared.
I'm like, the one time I don't have to take the freaking blame. This bitch don't show up. Oh, Lord. So anyways, the smoking, the drinking, the pills, that all basically span from 10. Yeah,
let's help that. What do you call it? Dabla?
Agmandala?
Let's help that.
Hell, I don't even know if I'm saying it right. I could be saying it wrong.
Let's help that by adding drugs and alcohol at a developing 10 and 11, 13-year-old mm-hmm. brain.
Yeah,
healthy.
For sure. But again, we did.
Yeah.
It's not in our core.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. That hurt. Oh, I just stabbed myself in the mouth.
With a pin.
Oh,
yeah. I watched it scrape your gum or your tooth onto your gum.
It went from my tooth all the way up into in between my lip. Okay, so moving on.
Stacy's
here.
Oh my gosh, I almost just choked on my water. So let's fast back, forward just a little bit to 20, age 20. So at 20, he was sentenced to 14 years for burglary. He robbed the house and then burnt it down.
Oh, so he's firebug.
Yeah.
He's so, firebug too.
Burglary and arson.
Okay.
Like burnt it down to the ground. Never really says why he burnt it. Just
he probably
robbed it and burned it. You know. He ended up only serving 17 months.
Now how the hell does that happen?
He was paroled. He was paroled and sent to a halfway house here in St. Louis.
Oh, wow.
So 14 years
and you served 17 months
and then paroled.
All right.
Yeah. So
let's put him back.
You know, sometimes the system fails us in many ways. We around September of 2005. So at this point, he's had a birthday. He's out of jail, living in this halfway house. He just says he didn't like the conditions of it, and he just couldn't take it anymore. So he ran away from the halfway house.
Okay, so you only serve 17 months of your 14 year. Mm-hmm. Now let's run away to take a chance to have to serve.
Yeah, because you're on parole.
All 14 years of your sentence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're so at this point, he runs away. And now you have a felony warrant. You're on parole. So
you're going to go back and serve your 14 years.
You just screwed yourself. Anyway, so he hitchhikes his way all the way back to his family home in Pineville. So I'm assuming one of his halfway houses up here in St. Louis, probably closer to the bomb terror area where a lot of them are.
Could be.
Probably where he was. Ends up hitchhiking his way all the way back to Pineville. He says he doesn't expect to be welcome back into his home because he's used to fighting with his father. They never really got along. He goes on this whole pity party story about how he has always felt rejected and blase, blase, blase. Well, naturally, him and his father get into a fight. His father kicks him out, says, get the fuck out. I don't want you here. So what does he do? He sneaks back into the family home. And he begins destroying the home.
Yeah.
He steals a bunch of his dad's, you know, stuff, breaking a bunch of his dad's stuff. He stole an AK-47.
The video showed like
knives
stuck in the
backwood shit.
Yeah, like knives stuck in the walls and just like weird.
Yeah, like they were
like,
I mean, trailer, you know, rundown trailer. No, it wasn't even a trailer. No, it was like a barn-ish. It looked like
a deliverance house or something.
What is the commercial? Let's hide behind the chainsaws.
Yeah. Yeah.
It looked like one of those houses, okay?
And you're talking no running water, no electric, no sewer, like.
Yeah. So it says he goes on to destroy the house, just basically vandalizing it. Overall, he ends up stealing his dad's AK-47, a hunting rifle, and a 9mm handgun, and takes off.
The pictures that they showed, there was quite the ammunition little stockpile there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they said there was tons of spent shell casings.
Looked like a bunch of shotgun shells.
Yes. Yeah. Spent shell casings.
Yeah. So he ends up stealing that stuff and takes off running. He only goes a couple miles away where he ends up noticing a couple is pulling out of the driveway and leaving their house. So he assumes, you know, naturally the house is now empty. So he decides to break into this house.
So he kind of already was on a spree. I mean, stealing, you know, breaking in stuff at his house, breaking and entering there, stealing stuff there. So he already started his spree.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if he, it didn't seem like, yeah, like, I don't know if he even realized what he really had. I don't think he had a plan at this point. But he sees these two people leave the house. And at this point, he's going through their house. He's burglarizing their house, seeing if they have anything of value. He's looking for, you know, if there's any car keys, is there a car that he can take? Is there anything of value? Not too long of the time that he's there. He says he don't even know how long he was there, but it was long enough for these people to go shopping and come back. And ultimately they had returned from shopping, and it was 70-year-old Orly McCool and his daughter-in-law, 47-year-old Dawn McCool. And I'm sure she was taking her father-in-law out to go grocery shopping. Nothing unusual there. No. You know, so they returned from shopping a short time after, and they're basically ambushed by Levi. He waited by the front door, kind of ducked off being unseen. He waited for them to enter. Dawn, I don't know why I wrote Michelle. Who the hell? Oh, that's the next one. Look at me. Anyway, Dawn walked in unknowingly through the house. Apparently there was like some steps that she had to go through. It was a split level home. And he stayed out of sight. He let her walk in. And as Orly was walking in the house, he snuck up on him and shot him in the temple.
Yeah, he said once he came in his line of sight, he said he knew right then.
Yeah.
That he had been spotted. And then
basically just walked up and shot Orly in the temple.
Left temple, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Naturally, at this point, you know, Dawn now hears and knows what's going on. But he states he could not see from where he was. He could not have a clear line of sight for her. He could only see her legs and like hip. So yep. He says that he fired a round at her, shot her in the hip, which this ultimately leaves her to fall.
Now, while all of this is going on, his dad, right, had reported.
Well, yeah. So while all this is going on, his dad has reported that his house has been vandalized.
Okay.
So he shoots Dawn. She falls to the ground, and he proceeds to walk up to her and continue to fire. And again, another chilling thing in his mind, nothing in his eyes, just complete emptiness, says, I just continued to shoot until there was no more signs of life.
Mm-hmm. And he says at that point blank,
cold,
I continued to shoot until I didn't see a sign of life.
Until I didn't see
any more signs of life.
Any more sign of life.
And I mean, it is the most nonchalant thing for
him
to say.
It's weird because he's got these eyes.
It's like no emotional connection.
And it's like, they're blue or crystally looking.
He's a very good looking man.
I mean, he looks just like.
No, I mean, it was weird. You would have no clue that this would be a
really
person.
Weird. Yeah. Really weird.
By physical look.
So again, his dad had reported the robbery. The McCools get called in as, you know, as a homicide and everything like that. He steals their truck keys. He says that he goes out to the driveway and he just sits there. And he, again, yeah, I'm just going to say this for the last time, because there's going to be like seven more of these, but cold as ice, he just says he felt an instant urge of peace.
Yep. He said he's never felt so quiet.
Ugh. I can't even. He basically said that he was looking to solve what he was feeling, and by killing them, it did. He felt completely at peace.
Oh my goodness.
After killing them.
At that point, what can you do to save a human that literally says, that's how I became at peace? Was randomly murdering two people.
I couldn't imagine being a jury and hearing that. I would just be like, what are we doing here? I'd look at everybody and be like, what the fuck are we doing here?
I mean, I understand, like, we have to have this trial, but can we speed it up?
Why are we here?
Let's give our verdict.
Yeah. So naturally, this has now been reported to the police. Police are investigating the McCool homicide. And it's determined that a 9mm was used to kill the McCools. So it quickly ties them, courtesy of his dad calling and saying, and being able to tell him what he took. I mean, he was able to tell him he took, you know, So he was able to tell him what he took. Again, it was only like a mile down the road. So, I mean, coincidence, clearly, I don't think it takes a whole lot of detective work
right,
to figure that one out. But, you know, kudos to them. So at this point, he goes on to say,
the misplaced rage, that he said it gave him the peace.
Yeah. He was originally saying that it was like misplaced rage and
to his father. He was mad at his father. Okay, you're mad at your father. Why go kill two random people?
Yeah. Well, then he goes on to say that he couldn't bring himself to kill his father because of his brothers. And he didn't want his brothers to see their father get killed by their brother.
Okay. Okay, so
I need so much of this to make sense.
Okay.
But the doctor that they interviewed on this documentary basically went on to say, that's literally all him just trying to justify in his head. He actually has a psychopathic personality, which basically he has a lack of human attachment.
Okay.
So he can't differentiate the connection of a human life. And it's an actual thing. He also called him a spree killer, not a mass murderer or anything like that. I brought my book though, because when he said spree killer, I actually, in my chapter, I just learned. So there's different kinds. You have your, let me find my page here, mark it. So he goes over, you have your serial killers, which is a person who kills three or more people.
Okay.
In separate events.
Okay.
So
not at one time.
Wayne Gacy's okay. Yep. And everything, right? Yep. Okay. Then you have your mass murderers, killing of four or more victims by one or fewer assailants within a single event.
Okay.
School shootings.
Yep.
Okay. Got it. So now we go on to spree killers. Spree killers are individuals who kill multiple victims over a relatively short span of time and often follow no dishonorable pattern. Just
so his is definitely
random. Okay. Spree, yep. Random killing.
Yep.
There was no reason for him to kill these two people, and there was no reason for him to continue
nothing
on
linking
to
him to these people. What he did. Nothing.
Yeah. Okay. So it was fun when he said that. I was like, oh, I just learned that.
You're like, I know there's different types of killers.
Right. So he stole their truck. And again, he just continues to drive. He's living on this high. He's, you know, feeling good and released and all that bullshit. So he ends up driving through the night. He basically said he tried to pull over and rest or whatever, but I guess he was still like living on the high. So he just kept going. Ultimately, he ends up driving all the way into Texas.
They said like, that's like a 13-hour trip or something. He drove for like 13 hours.
Yeah.
And then didn't he say, I don't know, you may have it in here, I may be jumping ahead, about like it lasted like 4 hours before he even remotely kind of had a feeling come back of anger.
I didn't put it in here, but he did say that he didn't feel nothing for a long time.
Yeah.
And
at least 4 hours before he even started having any type of anger again.
Yeah. Fucking
well, psycho. I'm glad two lives give you 4 hours apiece, fucker.
Right. What's that, 2 hours of life?
Sorry.
You got 2 hours out of each person.
I got a little.
Congratulations.
A little wound up there.
But anyway, so he drives through to Texas. Now we're into September 30th. So all this happened on September 29th. Now we're into September 30th of 2005. We're in the early, early hours. He's driving down Texas Road. And basically, again, says the feeling was gone and he wanted to find it again.
Oh.
So
I can't have you living.
Yeah. So he goes on to say, though, he didn't have any intention. But as soon as he saw the house, he was sure that he was going to kill whoever was inside.
So it was just a crime of opportunity. Like he drove by it and it was just an opportune house. It was isolated. It yep. was
mm-hmm.
no rhyme or reason, literally, yeah. besides it was out in the middle of
and
nowhere.
The doctor goes on to say, like, oh, you know, he says, oh, it was random. And I just randomly saw the house. And the doctor's like, no. I don't think it was random because he literally found somewhere that there was no neighbors. He could go do whatever he wanted to do as loud as he wanted to do it to feel that rush again.
As long as he wanted to do it.
Nobody would know.
Yep.
He could feel that rush again and then be on about his way. So no, he, you know, it wasn't just some random thing. This, however, leads him stumbling upon the Conrad home. Excuse me, where did I lost my place here? Feeling again. Okay. So he pulls into the Conrad home where Michelle, who is 5 months pregnant,
and her husband, Brian Conrad, live with their 14-year-old teenage son, Zach, and their 10-year-old daughter, Robin. He pulls into the driveway. He proceeds to take the AK out of the back seat and decides he's going to kick in the door of the comrade home.
Now this is like middle of the night too, right?
Yeah, like, it's like 3 a.m.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
it's like 3 a.m. is what I think it's.
So I mean, these people are completely bed sleeping, house down for the night.
Yeah, yeah. And so now based on what it was, so the receipt from the McCool home, because again, when he killed them, they had just come back from the grocery store, grocery bag still in hand, receipt and everything. That receipt was from September 29th at like 12:35. So he murdered them probably around 1 o'clock
in the afternoon. Drove
all night through to Texas. And okay. Now here we are around 3 a.m. the okay. next day. So he pulls out the AK, he kicks in the door, and the first bedroom, that he comes up on, is where Brian and Michelle are lying asleep. He said Michelle woke up, obviously, because I'm assuming heard him kicking the door. She was the first to wake up. He said she saw him, he saw her, and he immediately started firing. At this point, Brian now wakes up, and he said he just turned the gun and started shooting him. It was determined later that he had shot Michelle 6 times and Brian 3 times. Wow. Again, Michelle was pregnant, 5 months pregnant at the time. So yeah, we're going to leave it at that for right now.
Yeah.
He then goes onto the other room of the house where at this point now, 10-year-old Robin has heard the gunshots. She's heard her mom screaming. So, you know, naturally as a young kid, she gets up, she runs to her door to kind of see what's going on. And she knows that somebody's in the house. So she's basically running from her door back to her bed. Everything's still dark. Levi states that upon passing her room, he saw a very small silhouette shadow. He lowered the gun and he fired. At this point, Robin, who is 10 years old, said that she basically froze and just laid there in her bed and played dead. And Levi goes on to state he didn't fire multiple times or check, didn't flip a light on or check on this person because he didn't see the small silhouette as a threat.
Oh my goodness.
So he knew that this potentially was a child. He thought that he had shot and killed this child, and if he didn't, he wasn't that worried about it because
it was a child.
So again, that only tells you
yeah,
I mean, not that you need to know more about who this man is, but let that tell you a little bit. He then turned to Zach's room, who was right across the corner. In this room, he did flip on the light, and he just immediately shot and killed Zach. Zach was shot 3 times.
Also, he shot the dog at some point.
Yes. At some point, he had apparently shot the dog twice. He doesn't go on to own up to that or say that. That was just in the police.
Yeah.
That was from the police saying that. So I don't know when that happened, but at some point he shot the dog twice. So at this point, he starts looking to see if there's anything left to steal, if there's anything of value, anything like that. Then he goes on to, oh, Lord, did you see the whole normal family? Not like we.
Oh, in the pictures.
Oh, my God. And
I said, when I was watching, I'm like, maybe you should have looked at the pictures before you shot him. Yo.
Oh, my God.
If it's going to make you have remorse, you should have looked around before.
No. But he didn't. He didn't have remorse. He was just like, oh, well, they were a better family than we were. I'm like, why did you even, you know what? So anyway, Robin, who at this point is, you know, just this little girl. Where the hell did all my other notes go with that?
Yeah, about all the girl, yeah.
Huh, I don't know where that went. Oh, go from here. But she, little girl, you know, she played dead and she realized this man was gone.
So many things that just broke my heart hearing about her story.
Yeah, her story is really, really sad.
But I mean, what amazing. Seriously, at 10 years old.
Yeah.
The head.
All I could think about was like our kids.
Yeah.
Like at that age, you know, stories right around that age, like what would in her little mind, could she process to do that? Like,
but I think this also speaks to him talking about the perfect family. They, I mean, it says about their day, you know, like they woke up, they had to get up early because her brother had wrestling practice. They ate breakfast. You know, she went to gymnastics. Like he had baseball, very all-American. So it shows how much that mom worked with these kids.
Yeah.
If anything happens, you can tell by her 911 call. Yeah. She had,
she knew how, did you hear?
13.3 miles.
I was like, you go, girl.
That's what I said. She, I mean, the mom had practiced this with that 10-year-old.
And maybe that was because of where they lived. Maybe it's because they were so rural. And,
if
you know,
anything was to happen to mom or dad, you know, like, I feel like this conversation was had in this household.
It was heart-wrenching. Yeah. But this, bless this girl's heart, she, you know, she goes on to say that, you know, naturally, as a little kid, she's trying to play dead. I mean, you know, we're talking 3 a.m. in the middle of the night. She ends up falling back asleep.
Well, she's not even all the way on the bed.
Yeah.
It said she was half on the bed, half off.
She was half on and half off.
And this poor girl said she had stayed that way for so long that she was getting a 10-year-old girl leg cramps.
I know.
She stayed that way until her body was exhausted and she fell asleep. Oh, I mean, that just,
Yeah, it's heart-wrenching. But she ends up waking up the next morning and she immediately grabs the phone, goes outside and calls 911. She doesn't look at the house. She doesn't look in the house. She knows that she needs to get a phone and call 911. She makes the 911 phone call and, you know, again, just gut-wrenching to hear. She tells them, bless her heart, the exact location of where she is. Tells them there was a gunfight inside her house. She don't know who's alive or anything like that. Police arrive on scene, you know, naturally it's a little girl and, you know, one officer just basically asked her, you know, what can I do for you? And she just, young and innocent, was like, I gotta feed the animals.
I got responsibilities. The animals are my responsibility. I need to feed them.
Goes to feed the animals, you know, and the other cops go inside and, find the horrific scene that had just unfolded.
Man.
Yeah. So that's pretty intense. We go back to Mr. Levi, who at this point now in the interview is saying, nope, I felt nothing. That didn't do it for me.
I didn't get the peaceful high I was wanting.
Yeah. I felt nothing from those killings. I just drove off, went to a gas station, got a map and decided, well, I'm kind of screwed now. Mexico is my only option.
I can't ever go back to the United States.
Yeah, like just nonchalant. That's what it is. I can't go back. I did this, but you know, hey. So he buys a map, he buys some gas and he heads for Mexico. So it says that, well, your interpretation, I interpreted it all wrong, was he made it into Mexico, but had made a wrong turn or got turned around or something and ended up stuck in the line to get back into
America. Like, yeah.
So he basically got stopped at the freaking border. And once he was boxed in, I mean, if you've ever been or seen it, you know,
it's a funnel down to so many lanes and you're stuck.
It's literally a funnel. And I mean, it's designed that way. You can't get out.
Like, that's the reason they don't have turnoffs so many miles beforehand.
Right.
Because they don't want, you know, I mean, that's how it's set up.
Yeah. So naturally he gets caught at the border. They ask him if he has anything, you know, they want to search his car. Obviously he tells them he has guns and stuff. They run his name, blah, 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 blah. He gets arrested because he has a felony warrant out for running from his probation. Shocker there.
Imagine that.
As well as he's now being tied to the McCool murders. Mm-hmm. So he's also wanted for murder.
Because he has their truck. He's driving their vehicle. He's driving their stolen vehicle when he gets stopped at the border.
I didn't even put that together. Oh my God. I did not even think of that. So he's extradited back to Missouri. He admits to killing the McCools. He confesses to that. It's said that he ends up getting like chummy with the detective or whatever. I guess they made him feel comfortable enough. Side note to that, if anybody, it's on Roku channel. It's called Confession Tapes.
Okay.
It is insane to watch these interviews and what these police do to these people in their confession tapes. Mind-blowing,
really.
And that's clearly what he did. He worked him over. I mean, and a lot of that is too, you know, these people want the recognition, they want the acknowledgement, and obviously whoever this officer has made him feel that. And he got comfortable enough to say, how did he say it,
you know, there's four more out there.
Yeah, the what about the four in Texas or
yeah.
something.
Yeah, you know, there's four more out there. There's four in Texas.
There's four in Texas. That's what he said.
You know that, oh, that Texas panhandle that has the big white cross.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
That's how he pointed out.
There's four more out there.
What county it was in or whatever.
Yeah. So he ultimately pleads guilty. He confessed to that about the Texas murders. He, however, didn't know that Robin had survived. He thought that all of them were dead. So he confesses to that, and he ends up pleading guilty here in Missouri. He was sentenced, but, you know, everything's better in Texas, and they wanted their trial. They were not giving it up on that. They wanted him brought back to Texas. They wanted to go for the death penalty. And they wanted him tried for it.
I mean, you've literally, what's the count now?
It's
five, weird. But six.
Yeah. So it's weird for me though, when you get into the limitations of what qualifies as death penalty and everything like that. So death penalty, it has to be premeditated. And they could say that this, I guess they could argue that it wasn't, but he admitted when he saw that house, he knew
he knew.
So how is that not premeditated?
Premeditated. He turned around to go back to the house.
Like,
you turned around because you knew you were going to go in the house and kill someone.
Yeah. So he ultimately didn't get the death penalty in Texas.
If anyone deserves it, this one does.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Because
there's, and I'm sorry, when you can speak about a human life the way you are and have complete utter disregard, mm-hmm. there's
no hope left for you.
There's no rehabilitation. I'm sorry.
There's not.
Like, when you can literally say, oh, I killed two people, first time I've ever felt peace in my life. Yeah.
So they went on, they brought him back down to Texas and he pled guilty and he ended up going before a jury. The jury ultimately found him guilty. However, they gave him life without parole. They did not give him the death penalty. Robin was there. She did testify.
Man, that little girl.
Yeah.
That is a strong little girl.
She did testify. However, he's here in Missouri, serving his time. And I don't know that he'll ever make it to Texas. I don't know. I mean, I think it's 2029 that his sentence would probably be. And then at that point, once that's served here in Missouri, he'll transfer to Texas. I mean, he'll die in prison.
Well, yeah.
At the end of the day. But
it's still, I'm actually very shocked that Texas did not give this man the death penalty. I mean, he killed a completely random act of violence. She was pregnant. It was a, you know, like.
Yeah, and that was another thing. I didn't even mention, we forgot to mention that. They kept saying 5 people were killed. No, 6 people were killed. Just like the Amanda Jones case. It was not just Amanda that is missing. That baby is missing. Yeah. There is 2 people missing. Yeah. Like, that is a life that he took.
So, I kind of briefly looked it up a little bit, and that's something we need to do like a get back to question, because from what some things you see on the internet, they've had it since 2001, that any stage of gestation can be, I'll actually read it. I have it right here. All right. Please hold. Okay. So it says, the law defines an individual as a human being who is alive, including an unborn child at every stage of gestation, from fertilization until birth. So I don't know how he wasn't charged
He charged with that? That is really weird.
Yeah, so that's something I would love to find a little bit more about.
Yeah. So ultimately, I did a little bit deeper research beyond... I hear a pitter pat.
I did too. What was that?
No glow.
No Brando.
Loki. Hear. She'll randomly. You'll hear. Rawr, rawr. She's goofy. So a little bit digging beyond the documentary. I found in April of 2000. No. So in April of 2008, he was sentenced in Missouri.
Okay.
With 2 consecutive life sentences. By May of 2008, Texas wanted him back. They wanted his trial to be January of 2009. He later filed an appeal because he states that his Texas trial wasn't within 120 days of his arrival, and that he wasn't getting a reasonable, speedy trial.
They're pulling at straws. That's just
attorneys
have to probably. Right. I mean, that's standard.
He's got to exhaust his appeals. Yep. Which I mean is his right to exhaust his appeals, but like, dude, good luck. But they were trying to get it, they were trying to get the Texas stuff dismissed completely.
Because he was already
because they had failed his constitutional right of a speedy trial. It was not within, they have 120 days. He was not brought back until January of 2009 when all of it happened versus the murder versus his trial.
Oh my goodness.
We're talking, this happened in 2005 and now we're trying him in 2019. They're saying, no, it's been too long. You can't try him for this. You should have did it sooner.
Wow.
However, what the state and everything was smart about was they returned him under, it's a law and it's called an IADA, which basically states he was extradited according to the Uniform Criminal Extradition Act. By them filing it as such, he is not privileged to a speedy trial.
Really?
So by them filing it under there she is. What are you doing, girl?
She's out making my appearance.
What are you doing, girl? Hi.
What's the girl doing?
So by them filing it under the Uniform Criminal Extradition Act, he actually was not entitled to a speedy trial. So it was denied.
Well, good. It should be.
So he's not filed any other appeals. I don't know what she's
doing. Your dog is being crazy.
What? What are you doing?
What do you want? She's happy to see Aunt Stacy.
Oh, she over there? Oh, she, world.
She's like tearing it up over here.
Oh. She's behind the curtain. But anyway, so he was,
no
he
attention was denied to the man behind the curtain.
Oh my Lord. And he hasn't filed any other appeals. I don't know that he will. In his interview, which was done in 2013,
mm-hmm.
He basically goes on to say he has no remorse. He feels mm-hmm. nothing. He's not sorry. So at this point, I don't really see what his intent. I don't think he has any intentions of ever filing another appeal.
If he does, it'll be because an attorney has, you know, advised him, hey, you need to do this.
Yeah.
But I don't think he cares.
Stupid as an attorney with all of this, especially him on camera saying, I feel nothing. I have right. no remorse for what I did.
Oh, and hey, there's four more.
Like, you still to this day, from 2005 to 2013, you can look a camera in their face and say, no, I'm not sorry.
Yeah, I don't.
I really don't care that I killed. I don't care that I killed these people. Yeah,
pretty much. I mean.
So that's a true psychopath for y'all. It is on Hulu. It's called A Killer Speaks. It's season one, episode one.
Yeah, very first
yep. episode. So it's definitely an interesting watch. It's he's creepy. I don't know. He's just very creepy.
His eyes. Yeah. You mentioned his eyes. The little, she ain't little now. She's a grown woman now. The girl mentioned that though in court. She said, you know, his eyes just bore a hole through you.
Mm-hmm. They do.
Just with the way he stares at you, it's, can just bore
like. There you can see behind his eyes is darkness,
like it's not right, like yeah, there's the light's not
right,
the light's not on.
No, it's all. Not even dim.
Yeah,
the like that motherfucker is out.
There's just it don't work no it's more. That complete no human connection thing.
It's a true psychopath. Anyway, so that's our episode for today. I'm thankful for Stacey coming to do it with me, so woo-hoo! I didn't have to do it by myself.
Thanks for having me. It's fun. I haven't been here in a while.
I know, right? In our little home studio.
Yeah, this is cute. She got a whole little setup here.
Oh, Heather. Oh, I don't know if I can do it. She might be mad at me, but I'll show you.
Oh,
look at my Look at my cute little sticker. Oh, wait. Don't do that. Pause. Side note, I'll show you in a minute, because if I close my computer, it's gonna stop our recording.
Oh, please don't. I had fun, but I don't want to do it all over.
Okay, well, I'll just show you these then.
Okay, there we go.
Okay, so me and Heather, you know how at Loco we used to have the stickers on the table.
Mm-hmm.
So for our table, we're gonna do our own stickers.
Oh, look at that.
I bought some and Heather bought some.
Oh, I love them.
She's gonna be mad if you and I place the first sticker on.
Oh no, don't do that. No.
So
no,
we
no.
can't do that.
No.
But aren't they so cute?
They're adorable.
She has a whole bunch too. And guys, we have some custom Murder Show stickers that got made. So as soon as Heather gets them in,
we will post a picture
of them.
What does it say? True crime and bed by nine.
Oh yeah, true crime and bed by nine. I was like, oh, that's Stacey.
That's right there. Definitely mine.
It was
my husband.
We got these to put on our little table. I'm going to have some made for Adam in buckets. He don't know yet.
Knows a lot about serial killers. Mm-hmm. I like
this
these.
One on my computer.
That's yeah, I like that you. One a lot. With the caution bow. That's
yes,
cute.
Isn't it cute?
These are really cute.
Super cute.
This is the first one.
Yeah. Yeah, so it'll be fun.
Cool. So can I come over and watch when you guys stick them on?
Yeah, if you come over.
I'll come over.
One of the reasons she got you to come over today was because you owe her.
I do owe her.
Because you were in the doghouse with her.
Oh, she was mad at me.
She's like, your sister's coming today. And I was like, oh, she is?
How'd you pull that one off?
She's like, she owes me. I was like, oh, okay. I don't know what y'all got going on, but I heard you are in trouble.
I was in trouble.
Anyway, so hopefully Heather will be back with me on the next one. Hopefully her garage sale goes good.
Next time, let us know. We all got stuff that can go in a garage sale.
Yeah, let me freaking know.
I know. I'm like, I got a garage that needs.
Great. What the hell? Anyway, so we are on Stitcher. Oh my god. We are on Stitcher, Spotify, Google, Apple.
I've been having some problems with Apple. I don't know why. Anybody else? Maybe. No.
Are these Heather's glasses? Sorry to interrupt. Totally.
They're the ones that Adam stole from Heather at Heather's wedding.
These are the sunglasses.
Those are the glasses. Those are the infamous sunglasses.
They were on the table. So, yes.
Stitcher, Spotify, Google, Apple, all your podcast people, we are there. Murder Shows and Come Close. We also have a Snapchat and a Talk, which I don't do very many of. I'm really bad at social media. Like, I'm so bad at social media. I need a social media rep. Hit me up. Anyway, we love you guys. Thank you. We're sorry about last week. We didn't get an episode out. Pretty sure that was probably my fault.
I love that you take credit for all of it.
Pretty sure it was my fault. So yeah, let's do. Stacy hasn't got to sign off in a while, so
I haven't done it.
Until next time, stay comfy. Don't get murdered.
Don't get murdered.